You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great weekend, and you need to write down that this Thursday is the premiere of The Way Down, God, Greed, and the Cult of Gwen Shamblin, an HBO Max original documentary series. I just interviewed the executive producer last week. This is a must watch. After rising to fame with this Way Down workshop, a Christian-based diet program that preached slenderness as next to godliness, Gwen Shamblin Lara founded the Tennessee-based church Remnant Fellowship. Despite a carefully curated image, Lara and the church soon fielded accusations of emotional, psychological, and physical abuse and exploitation for their alleged cult-like practices. So it encompasses years of investigation and extensive interviews with former members and others personally impacted. You have got to watch this. HBO Max premieres Thursday. I also have some homework for you. There's a CNN Originals documentary called The Lost Sons. You guys have to watch this. This is your serious homework too. A baby boy was kidnapped from a Chicago hospital in 1964. 15 months later, a toddler is found abandoned in New Jersey. The FBI links the two cases and unites the parents and the foundling, the baby that was left behind. Decades later, DNA evidence suggests that Paul Fronczak may not actually be the one who was raised to think he is. Fronczak narrates his own story and the twists and the turns as he unravels the mystery of his identity and what happened to the two families involved in his life's beginnings. This is a story I've been following for years. I've already interviewed Paul. That's an upcoming episode. You have to watch this. It is called The Lost Sons. It's on CNN. This week also features the premiere of the new season of Vanderpump Rules. Of course, Lala and Sheena have new babies. The Problem with Jon Stewart is on Apple TV Plus. It's a deep dive on the most important topics that are currently part of the national conversation. I'm also putting that on my must-watch list this week. Also, Britney versus Spears, the Netflix documentary, journalist Jenny Elisu and filmmaker Aaron Lee Carr, who is an excellent filmmaker, investigate Britney Spears' fight for freedom by the way of exclusive interviews and confidential evidence. Lastly, you should also check out 48 Hours Mystery. It was on this past Saturday, and it's about the Gabby Petito case. If you go to my Instagram and go to my Patreon, I've done bonus episodes with Jonathan Mark Medium about this case, and I made those episodes on Patreon public, so you can see clips of it on my Instagram at katecaseyca. So make sure you check them out. These are all listed on my must-watch list this week. If you go to katecaseyca.substack.com. There's tons of great stuff to watch this week, and those are just some of them. But again, you've got to check out The Way Down on HBO Max and The Lost Sons, which is streaming CNN on demand, and I'm sure it'll pop up on Hulu pretty soon. Again, that one's called The Lost Sons. This episode I've been so excited about because I got a chance to talk to Paul P.K. Kemsley. He's the husband of Dorit Kemsley, a cast member on Bravo's Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Now, P.K. is from London, and he's been a little bit of a not fan favorite, if you will, for some time. But this season, he's been hilarious. He's always in scenes with Maurizio, who is Kyle's husband. And they've had some pretty hilarious moments, especially when they talk about the Erica Jane case. So I've been asking, is it possible for me to talk to him? Now, I want you to understand that they said, please don't ask him about Erica stuff because they want it to play out through the end of the season and into their reunion. There's going to be a 4-part reunion on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And I said yes because there's so much other stuff I wanted to talk to him. And I know that you wanted to know about the stories about their finances, how he met Dorit, what it's like for them at home, his kids, his first marriage, how the producers found them. There's so much interesting stuff that he talked about in the interview. And also, I just always thought it was fascinating to get an inside look at what it's like to be the spouse of a cast member on one of these shows. So I'm sure you're going to love him. I found him to be charming and warm. And again, he's the husband of Dorit, who's on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. His name is PK, and he's got a thick British accent, and he was so funny to talk to. And then I talked to author, host, and socialite Nikki Haskell. Nikki has been on the social scene in Beverly Hills forever. She's 80 years old, and I got the biggest kick because she's very good friends with my friend Megan, who I go way back with, and she was on this season of Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles. But she's also really good friends with Kathy Hilton, the Kardashians. And I wanted to ask her about the CNN documentary that I watched on Jackie Collins, who was a prolific writer, and she just passed away last year. So I wanted to ask her a little bit more about what Jackie was like, and also was surprised to hear what she thought about the documentary on CNN. She does give me a little tip about the Kardashians meeting up with Lorne Michaels in Beverly Hills at the hotel there. And it sounds like Kim Kardashian's going to be on Saturday Night Live. So you heard it first right here on this show. So sit back and here we go. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. PK, I'm so excited to talk to you. It's been so fun to watch you on the show. And I'm sure it's kind of a surprise and a funny surprise that you've become this big fan favorite. Do you feel like times have changed and that can you feel the support of everybody that's watching the show?
Yeah, I think you can, particularly if you've had so many years of not feeling that much love and support. So yeah. It becomes quite tangible when the, what do they say when the tide turns? Yeah. So yeah, of course I can. I get a lot of great messages, nice messages. I don't necessarily understand what I did to get this kind of love and what I did previously to get less love. You know, I mean, these things are are always a narrative that's created by the producers. And, you know, I mean, I can certainly explain away season one in as far as I'd never seen the show, had no idea what I was doing and paid the price for that. But as time went on, the reality is it's down to the edit. It's down to what they think is relevant to the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, yes, I'm pleased.
Let's talk a little bit about your life before we got a chance to meet you. You're from England. You're one of...
I am. I'm from London.
One of three boys, the middle child, correct?
Middle child with all the syndromes that go with it.
I get it. I feel it too.
But I'm still my mum's favorite. Just to let you know, in case my older brother listens. So Stephen, if you're listening to this, still the favorite, man.
Still the favorite. So what was it like growing up in London?
I had a great childhood. I'm not one of these guys who thinks, oh, I had a horrible childhood or a bad relationship with my parents. I speak to my mum and dad every day. Oh. Super close. I grew up in a very, very loving, supportive household. I had a great time at school. We were normal. I mean, just normal. We were a bit better than working class, but not much. Mm-hmm. You know, my father comes from a working class background. My grandfather was a cabinet maker in the East End of London. So, you know, I was the first in our family to get into big business.
That's great. But you dropped out of school when you were 17 years old?
Well, I did, but it sounds worse than it is because everybody kind of dropped out of school. School in the UK finishes at 16/17 and you either go to university or you don't. And I didn't have the exam results that would suggest that university was an option for me. So, I went straight out to work. I was always the kid that tried to avoid doing anything. You know, I mean, I had various Saturday jobs, various jobs throughout my, you know, teen years. I worked in a market. I worked in a butcher, you know, but the reality is everything I did was basically because my dad wouldn't give me any money. It wasn't out of this burning need to work. So, and in fact, the first job I got was in real estate, and it was by pure chance. I was basically looking in the classifieds, would have taken anything, but this particular job came up. And, you know, it could have been in any industry. It could have been in, you know, the music industry, the media. It could have been anywhere. It just happened to be in property.
And did you enjoy it?
I hated it. Yeah. Like, I was getting paid £4,000 a year. My father's kept every letter, every, you know, he's kept everything. He's such a great dad. And he gave me for my 40th birthday, it was a book that he put together. Literally had my first job offer. Like my first resignation offer. He tracked my whole career, every house I've ever bought, every car I've ever owned. It was beautiful, but I didn't like it. I was bullied. I mean, in today's world, you would never, ever get away with what they did to me. But in the world I grew up, it was normal. I worked in the basement. There was no windows. There was water running down the walls. I was running a printing machine. I used to get sandwiches. If I did filing, you know, when I finished it, one of the seniors would come in and kick the desk over and all the filing would be on the floor and say, do it again.
Oh my God.
You know, it was definitely the school of hard knocks for me.
But you're grateful for it, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I look back. I mean, the funny thing is, there's a funny story. When I was 17 or 18, in those days, there was no internet. And the property particulars, the sales information was all on a single piece of paper with a photograph. And every day there was about 500 commercial real estate brokers in London who shared information by it all being delivered. So essentially every day I would get 250 pieces of paper that my job was to put them in specific files. Like this is, you know, London W1, this is London W2, all that sort of thing. Anyway, I let it build up because this guy kept, every time I did it, kept emptying it on the floor. And then one day I had this great idea. Quietly at night, I'd go back and get the whole lot, put it in a black garbage sack and take it like 2 miles away and dump it, right? Because I thought, well, they don't read it anyway. Anyway, the next morning, somebody, there must have been a garbage guy who saw it and delivered it back to the office I was working in. So when I walked in, it was all on the floor.
Oh my God.
With a message, you do this again, you're fired. Yeah.
Holy shit.
And flash forward, when I actually became who I became in that industry, I did a Q&A for young entrepreneurs, and there was about 1,000 people in the room, and the original boss stood up and he said, "Have you got any advice for kids who want to start off in the real estate business?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Don't throw away the filing."
No,
do you know what I mean? It was one of those moments. So, yeah, that was a defining moment in my career where I realized I couldn't fast track everything.
So how long did you work in real estate?
I stayed in real estate until I lost my business in 2009. So I was in real estate from the age of 17 to the age of 40. No, 42.
And what was the moment that you hit your peak success in real estate where you thought, like, I've made...
2007. 2007, my birthday, I had Billy Joel play live. I had Duran Duran play live. I had Jackie Mason. I had Craig David. I had the Gypsy Kings. I flew 250 people out to a venue in Spain. And ironically, Katie, it was the peak of everybody's success. So it wasn't just mine.
Yeah.
It was, we were in that world where just whatever you were doing, everyone was doing well. You know, I remember on the day we flew, I was on the front page of the Financial Times as rumored to be buying a public company, which at the time was over $1 billion. And yeah, that was the peak of my career in terms of, you know, financial success. But I've obviously learned subsequent to that, that the peak of your career isn't necessarily defined by financial success. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was for me, that was the peak. And it was such a special time because everybody was doing great.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, were you happy? Were you happy personally then? Like, you had the financial success, but were you personally happy?
No, clearly I wasn't, because it was, you know, I separated from my first wife two and a half, three years later, and we had a traumatic last period of my marriage. I got married very young. I got married at 23.
Wow.
My mum told me not to do it. And that's another story. But my first marriage was filled with drama, trouble. I sort of went into this big, massive commercial world, and my ex-wife never came with me on the journey. I mean, that essentially was the was the issue. And I did say to myself that if I ever met someone, there would have to be someone that could roll with me spiritually, be present, come with me on my journey, you know, like a partner.
Yeah.
And I always wanted someone who looked great in high heels. So I really ticked both boxes. Listen, I'm blessed that I found, you know, my soulmate later in life. But the truth be told, I don't live the same life that I lived then anyway. You know, I mean, that was a period of my life. It was a long period. And obviously, subsequent to that and going on the show, I've had to listen to 5 years of total bullshit about what actually happened. And he went bankrupt and the lawsuits and all this shit. And the reality is they like to use this term deep dive in America. You could do a deep dive on me all you like, and you'll never find one individual that ever said that I took anything from them or did anything badly. I mean, on the Housewives, the story and the narrative is not interesting, that actually it was the bank that went bust. And they got overtaken by the government, and they're the ones who went bust, and I went bust with them because they had 40% of my company. So it wasn't, I didn't actually go bust. The banks went bust. And the reality is,
this was the Bank of Scotland.
This was the Bank of Scotland. And it's well written about now. And you know what? You probably haven't even heard the end of the story, because I may well choose to revisit it legally with the Bank of Scotland and the current executives, because there's been a government report recently that states very, very clearly that they were fraudulent in what they did. And the reality is, I'm not bitter. Do I sound bitter? I'm not bitter. But the reality is, if I had my real estate now, it would be worth over $4.5 billion. So, you know, I didn't actually, it sounds really childish, doesn't it? I didn't actually do anything wrong. I was just caught up in a global financial crisis, you know?
Well, your mistake probably was just investing into one bank, right?
Hey, Katie, that's really bright of you. That's absolutely correct. 100% correct was that I had all my eggs in one basket, in one bank. And that is absolutely correct. And the irony is, I was backed by this gazillionaire who's still a gazillionaire for many, many years. And I was attracted by the bank who flew me to France. and said, PK, we're going to give you 750 million. Go and build a balance sheet for the bank. We haven't gone bust since the Jacobean War. They were showing me charts. And that seven-year deal lasted 7 months, right? Wow. So, you know, at the end of the day, I was caught up in a... One of my great friends is a guy called Mike Ashley. He said to me, PK, you were naked on the beach and a tsunami hit, which basically meant you had all the leverage, you had the banks. But once the banks had gone, and never in 100 years has that ever happened. Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that happened subsequent to that was me dealing with the fact that actually all my equity had been swiped. You know, I don't live how I used to live. Yeah, in terms of I had my own aeroplane. I spent my summers on super yachts. I don't live like that anymore. I live in a beautiful house. Yes, we own it. I've had lawsuits. Yes, they've all been dealt with. There are no judgments that exist. A lot of the hearsay and rumor and this new word that I learned in America called grifter. I mean, why the fuck am I a grifter? What have I ever done in my life to suggest that I'm a grifter? The reality is a few comments that people don't like on The Housewives where my humor's got lost. And I've only ever really, truly, Katie, joked. I mean, I joked my way through the first three seasons because I found the whole thing just funny. And then I realized that actually it was having an effect on Dorit and I had to change the, you know, the way I, you know, presented myself.
Do you think that there's a difference between British and American humor? And do you think that that's a problem sometimes is that...
Well, it's not a problem. But first of all, my wife's American. Two of my five kids are American. So I better get used to the fact there's a difference. There's definitely a drier sense of humor in the UK. And definitely we can push the boundaries of our humor much further than you can in America.
Yeah.
So, for example, I can even joke with Dorit and she won't always get it. And I can talk to my Jagger. Sometimes I don't even understand what he's saying. I posted something the other day. He's going, how do you spell goal? I said, G-O-A-L, goal. No, daddy, girl. He was saying girl. And I literally was 5 minutes, couldn't understand him.
Oh.
And then, of course.
I thought you said goal.
I thought we said goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, even with Dorit's, I've got such a strong London accent, even though I've been in the US for 11 years. I mean, it doesn't go away. I mean, there are words I use that are American. And when I go back, apparently.
Well, they probably think you sound American now, right?
Yeah, well, no, they don't think I sound American, but they think I use Americanisms. But apparently when I go back to London, Katie, my accent gets much stronger. Right. Yeah. It's really funny because, you know, because I talk to people. I was in the UK for a long time this summer. And when I'm talking to people, they're going, oh, you've gone right back to talking exactly how you spoke 11 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But the truth is, when you're with people and you live in the States, there's definitely like words that you like tomato, tomato, restroom versus toilet, sidewalk versus pavement. The list goes on, you know? Yeah. But, you know, it's my life now. I live here.
And people think that Dorit's accent is like a mishmash.
Do you know what? Dorit is like
a
load of rubbish.
It's like a mishmash of other things, I'm assuming.
You know, I'm so happy to talk about this, Katie, because the truth is the concept that Dorit puts on an accent is so stupid. Of course she doesn't put on an accent. First of all, she's lived with me 11 years. Her father's Israeli, total Israeli accent. Her mother's from Argentina, total don't even know what the fuck her accent is. It's okay to swear on this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. And then, sorry for your younger listeners. And then she lived in Europe for 11 years. And even when we first got together, Dorit pronunciates. Is that the right word? It's really funny. So she'll say things like, important.
Yes.
Right? As instead of important. I mean, she'll put syllables in words that don't exist. Right? And it's really funny, but she's been doing that since I've been with her. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I guess all of these storylines and all of these views that people have, you know, they're steeped in essence in the truth, but, you know, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Do you know what I mean? It's that old saying.
Yeah, well, I also think, you know, the burden of the audience member is that we're watching clips of your life, right? So it's almost like a puzzle where we're all trying to figure it out.
But what if there isn't no puzzle? What if there literally is no puzzle? I mean, I get up every day and I don't live in a puzzle, right? I'm on this show with Dorit. Yeah. Lord knows why I did it. And now we've done it. For so long, it's just part of our lives. I didn't actually. Shall I tell you a funny story? When I Dorit is right. I was the one who instigated it. And I thought it would be great fun. And the reason I thought it would be great fun.
And how did you even know about it? Because you don't seem to be somebody who knows about the shows.
I'll tell you what happened. There was a publicist that I knew that was doing work for Boy George. And she, Dorit and I, and George shot a 20-minute over, it was 20 minutes in the end, but it was over 3-4 days. And it was a sizzle for a show called At Home with the Boy. And it was all about Boy George living with us. And it was kind of, he was going out dating, and it was by an amazing producer, a great friend of mine called Jeff Jenkins, who's responsible for the Kardashians.
I know who he is, yes.
So you know Jeff, and Jeff I love. And I'd come to the States. I was managing Pele, and I was managing Boy George, and I owned the New York Cosmos soccer team at the time, and I had a number of business initiatives. No, I'm not only Boy George's manager. That's not only what I do. Anyway, I thought it would be a great thing for George to do, and we did it, and it was shown to Bravo. And I believe what happened was that the bosses at Bravo said, we don't like this show. We can't see a place for it, but we like her. How about having her for the Housewives?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
And then a publicist called and said to Dorit, she just had Phoenix, and said, do you want to cast for the Housewives? And I was going, go on, what a laugh. You know, that kind of thing. I had not even seen it, but I knew Vanderpump, right? So I knew that Lisa had been super successful on it. Mm-hmm. And somebody, a very dear friend of mine, again, a very big business guy who's in LA, said to me, PK, you want to live in LA? There are only 3 entry points in LA. He said, there's money and you better have billions and you better give a lot away. He said, power, which means you need to control a studio or be super powerful, or celebrity. So I said, well, fuck that. Our celebrity is my cheapest way in. Dorit, go and audition for The Housewife.
Brilliant.
And that was essentially how we ended up. And she came back almost traumatized from this interview. She just had Phoenix, right? She'd had no experience being on camera at all.
Yeah.
And she came back and she was like, it was like an interrogation. There were lights and they were firing questions at me. And when I'd answer the question, they'd fire another one. And she goes, PK, trust me, it was the worst ever. And I'm never getting this job. And I said, all right, well, you've tried it, right? Yeah. Then they came back and said, oh, can we shoot some more at your house? So I said, Dorit, let's show them a real party. Let's do it the way we do it. And I did a beautiful party that night. It was a real party. And I had a lot of eclectic guests and beautiful flowers. And Dorit looked amazing. And they filmed it. And then the next day, one of the producers, I'd lent him a sweater because it was cold. And he sent me back the sweater. It was delivered. And with a note saying, thanks for all your efforts. I hope you have a great life in LA. See you soon. And it was about 8 weeks later, we never heard a word. The showrunner calls on the mobile. And I never forget it because I was on the balcony and Dorit was in the hotel suite. We're at the Park Hyatt in Sydney. And she goes, I mean, your listeners can't see, but I'm indicating like someone pointing at a phone. So I said, well, answer it. And she answers it. And I can see her face and she just holds her thumb up. And as if to say, I've got the job. And the funny thing is the guy said, he tried to be so dramatic. He said to Dorit, in my job, I have to give bad news and I have to give good news. And in this instance, I've got great news. You're the new housewife. Well, Dorit, she didn't even react. He certainly never got the reaction he wanted because she was in total shock.
Shock, if that makes sense.
Total shock, Katie, right? And she put the phone down and she looked at me and like, listen, what have you fucking done? And I said, baby, you're going to be good. They don't get it wrong. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so the journey began.
So we were led to believe that you guys were these dear old friends of Lisa Vanderpump. How true is that?
It's half true. I was very friendly with Lisa and Ken. I don't recall when I met them, but it was several years earlier. I mean, I went out for dinner with my ex-wife and Lisa and Ken. So it was clearly went back quite a while. Yeah. We had a lot of mutual friends. And I loved their company. I loved her. Lisa and I used to laugh hard. I mean, I used to love going to her restaurant. You know, we were always treated superbly well there, and we did it once a week. And yeah, of course, Lisa would sit there and want to tell me what she's doing on the show and everything, and I wasn't that interested, but we used to laugh. And then obviously that dynamic continued for a couple of seasons, and unfortunately ended badly, but yeah. What can you do?
But that must have been nice for you to have somebody from London in town.
Oh yeah. So I felt sure. I mean, I've got friends from London. There are plenty of Brits in LA, and believe it or not, I make friends with Americans as well. Yeah. So I've got some friends here. I don't have a lot of friends here. All of my massive circle of friends are in the UK. And you build different relationships in LA. It can be a little bit fickle. It can be a little bit surface.
Yeah.
But I mean, my best friend here is Mauricio. I mean, so I've got, and any guy would tell you, you don't need 1,000 mates around you. You know, if you've got a couple of good mates that you can really talk to, and obviously we're on the same journey. So we've got a unique relationship, a unique bond that nobody who isn't doing what we're doing would even understand it. Do you know what I mean?
So, I think that's also why people are enjoying you so much, is that sometimes on these shows, it doesn't seem like anyone's really close friends. They seem more like coworkers. But seeing you in scenes with Mauricio and Dorit and Kyle, you really get the feeling that you guys are all great friends.
Oh, absolutely. We are terrific friends, but we were terrific friends with Lisa and Kenny as well. I have good relationships with most of the ladies. I'm very close with Carl. I adore her, and she's super funny. And even when I first met her, she used to annoy me because I didn't realize it was basically like whatever it is, ADHD or whatever it is that means that you're in the middle of a conversation and you look elsewhere. And when I first met Carl, I used to talk to her, and I'd be literally in the middle of talking, and all of a sudden she'd start talking to someone else. And I used to think, I'm fucking rude. But now when I realized and got to know Carl, I realized she was never being rude. That's just, she's 100 mile an hour. And now we're great friends. I mean, I have my own relationship with Carl. I text with Carl. We joke a lot. And we love them. We have a good time with them.
How much has this show impacted your life in terms of, you can't travel or you have to be available for filming, and then the emotional stress that comes with it? Because your wife obviously has the pressures that come with being on camera, watching it play back. How much does this take over your life while you're filming and then after filming's done?
I think it's a great question. It's very consuming emotionally and time-wise. You need to understand that even though my wife is the one taking the pressure and the one who's having the comments, I, as her husband and someone who loves her, feels that pain. So it's, if someone's attacking my wife, it's exactly the same as them attacking me. In fact, it's far worse.
Probably.
Right? Because I'm a big boy and I can handle it.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can, time-wise, it's very, very time-consuming for her. You know, they shoot over 6 months. It's 4 or 5 days a week. But it's not, we don't wake up in the morning with a load of cameras in our bedroom. It's all pre-planned. So we kind of know, you know, what we can and can't do. I haven't been on the show that much in the last few years because it's interfered with my own scheduling. You know, if I've got something going on. So I as a business guy, cannot cancel an engagement of business just to be on the show. If it works out that I can be on the show and the producers now, dear friend Alex at PK, you've got to be at this thing, I will always try and do it to support Dorit. As far as the emotional toll it takes, it's very simple. You know, the truth be told, if you don't read that shit on Twitter, and I'm not on Twitter, then you are fairly emotionally protected, right? Yeah. So, because you don't actually have to read it, right? Yes, you're going to see the tabloids. And for me, over the last few years, the narrative that he's this and he's this. There was always an element that I wanted to scream and shout and tell people otherwise, right? But the simple truth is, people are going to have their view anyway. And nobody's really interested in knowing the complex detail of a kid that started with nothing, built a business from a standing start to the size I've built. And what I went through and my journey is my journey. And now I've put myself in the public forum, I've got to expect that people are going to have opinions. Are they informed opinions? No. Am I the guy that I've been billed to be? No, I've never been that guy. I'm actually the softest guy you've ever met. I'm very emotional. I love my wife. I love my kids. I love my job. And the truth is, I'm not anywhere near that guy. I've never been that guy that has been portrayed. Yeah, I can say some dumbass jokes and get in trouble. Do you know what I mean? But I'm not a chauvinistical guy. I'm a father of three daughters. Do you know what I mean? I've got three daughters. Trust me, I can only ever evaluate myself by how would I expect someone to treat my own daughters. Do you know what I mean? And I try and keep within sight that, if you like, that margin of error. So I'm just not the PK that this show created over 4 years. I am the PK you saw in the last few weeks, but that's just me seizing on the fact that I was funny and I'm popular now, Katie. So I'm keeping that bit. I'm holding on to that.
Who the castmates on the show, would we be surprised to know that you relate to the most?
I relate to Maurizio the most. He's in real estate. We've got kids, similar age groups. Our wives are doing the same job. They live around the corner to us.
Yeah.
Maurizio and I love to drink. We love to chat. We love to go for dinners. I went for dinner with him two nights ago. We went to an opening of a friend's restaurant. Mm-hmm. We love being together. We both like a little bit of fuss occasionally. So, you know, it's all cool. Harry Hamlin, I started to speak to a lot more lately. I really like Harry. He's a complex guy. He's, you know, he's very bright. He's an actor and he's a real actor. And of course, for me, I get a kick out of the fact that I grew up watching LA Law, and I even like had the suitcase he had, and I start asking him, not the suitcase, briefcase, you know, those when the lawyers carried those briefcases in LA Law and the suits and everything. When I was growing up, they were the bomb. So my life is great because sometimes I get a chance to talk to people that I grew up on. Do you know what I mean? And become their friends. Even Boy George is a typical example of that. He's a guy that I grew up on. Now he's my best mate and I'm running his career. It's fabulous, you know, and there's an element of me that's still stuck in my childhood and still remembers the TV shows I like, the artists I like. So I know that was a long-winded answer to who do I relate to the most, but I think the answer is Maurizio, you know.
What would you like viewers to know about Dorit? Maybe something that doesn't come across on screen or a part of her life that isn't really, we haven't been privy to yet. What do you want people to know about her?
I don't feel the sense or the need to shout about Dorit from the rooftops, but I will tell you this. She is the kindest, sweetest girl you've ever met. And everything with Dorit goes into her heart and her soul. And if as much as it goes in, when she's talking, if she can't finish her thought process and it doesn't come out, she can sometimes get caught. My older brother always says to Dorit, after he asks her a question and she's going on for like 5 minutes, he's like, Dorit, it's a fucking yes or no. Do you know what I mean? He'll get like...
Is this Stephen? Stephen says that?
This is Stephen. Yeah, he's so funny when Dorit, because Dorit does give long-winded answers, but she is... Obviously, she's blessed with a beauty that is on another level, right? And she's the most beautiful girl, but she's also the kindest. She's the most honest. She wants to please, and she'll do the best to try and please the public who she thinks want to see, for example, the way she dresses,
right,
or the glam. She's a total control freak. I mean, down to, you know, how much milk I've put in my coffee or what I'm eating, or she'll be like, I'll wake up in the morning, all of a sudden there's a green juice on my bedside. Drink it, PK. And then I'll start, I'm not talking to you till you've drunk it.
Yeah.
She's caring. But I'll tell you what, if I had to say one thing, that she's the best in the world. She's the best mother I've ever seen. Mm. She is just an unbelievable mum. That the time, effort that she takes with my kids, our kids, and they are so well balanced. And Jagger and Dorit have this incredible, extraordinary relationship. She's got so much patience. She'll sit and explain things. I'm a father of five, and I don't get 1% close to what Dorit does. I mean, I'm not I'm a typical dad. I'm not that patient. Can't we watch a movie? You know, blah, blah, blah. I need to, when I'm with the kids, I need to be occupied and doing something. Mm-hmm. Dorit can literally sit there, and if they've got a question, she will take her time and she will answer. And those kids come first, above and beyond anything. So as a husband, she's a great wife and an unbelievable mother.
What is the age range for your kids? Because Daniel's your oldest?
26.
And he's in the TV business? Movies
and
TV?
He's in books. He's cutting his teeth in the movie business. He's on set with the Expendables in London at the moment, which is my friend Jason Statham and Sly Stallone and my very dear friend Kevin King Templeton, who's the producer, who's also the producer of the Boy George movie. Daniel's done about 5 or 6 movies. He went to film school. He's an intense kid. He doesn't watch the show. He's not interested in this show.
Yeah.
He's not on social media. Mm-hmm. But he's bright and he's coming to LA soon. So I'm really excited to have him here. Atlanta is my eldest daughter. She's 22. She's a makeup artist.
Very cool.
And she's totally fabulous. She's super kind and very bright, very opinionated. She's moved to LA and she's got opinions and she's not frightened of giving them. Mm-hmm. My youngest daughter from the first marriage is Tatum and she's 19. She's the bright one. She's the academic. She just started at Edinburgh University and she's doing a major in politics and languages, Spanish, and I want to say she's taking Chinese. She's really good. She's a straight A student. Again, tough little thing. And then I've got my babies, so 5 and 7. So I go from 5 all the way through to 26.
What experience has that been like, having kids with, you know, the big age gap? Do you feel like it's different this time around?
Oh, it's totally different.
Yeah.
First of all, when I had Daniel, I was just a normal guy with a normal job and mm-hmm. I had to do the night feeds and Saturday was going to the local park and everything was pretty normal. By the time Phoenix came along, we were living in a completely different world. But on the way, I mean, my eldest kids lived a very privileged life because they lived through the period where I was super successful. So,
yeah.
You know, my oldest kids had never flown commercially until they were like 12, 13 or even older than that. And, you know, they were part of the party scene that we had. My son had the most enormous bar mitzvah with the Black Eyed Peas. We lived a very extravagant life, but that was a different time. And then now with my kids, obviously, I'm much, much closer with Dorit than I ever was with my ex-wife, and we do everything together. And I didn't even think for one minute that I would have more kids. It just wasn't even on my radar. I just didn't even think about it. And Dorit said to me once in London, we've been together about, I want to say, 2.5 years. And she said to me, do you want to have children? And I was like, I swear to you, I was drunk in the Dorchester Hotel. And I go, yeah, great idea. Let's do that. I said, but I must warn you, I don't miss, right? So if you want to have them, be prepared to have them quickly.
Oh my God, of course.
Right, so yeah. So she's like, okay. And she did fall pregnant really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a funny story, Katie, you like this. Mm-hmm. So we were again back at the same hotel. It's kind of our joint there.
Beautiful hotel.
Yeah, love it. And we went out that morning. And we went to this local cafe and it was about 10 in the morning and Dorit ordered strawberry cheesecake and literally started eating it like a crazy person, right?
Oh boy, yeah.
And I was looking at her and thinking, oh my God, she's pregnant, right? And then I said to her later that night, I said, you're pregnant. She went, don't be so stupid. And we've been out drinking. I said, I'm telling you, you're pregnant. She goes, why are you saying that? I said, well, who orders fucking cheesecake for breakfast, right?
Right.
So I sent down to the concierge to get me some pregnancy tests. So they sent up these tests and it was very unusual because I thought, why is this a box of like 40 tests?
Oh God.
Right?
It was an ovulation kit?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh God.
So basically I told Dorit and she looked at it and I went, I can't tell if you're pregnant or not. And she goes, let me have a look at that. She goes, it's a fucking ovulation kit, you moron. So anyway, subsequent went down, got another one. And I said, well, you're pregnant. And she was like, no. And it was like, it was quite a moment, you know?
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't expect, but And the answer to your first question, how's it different? Obviously, I'm older. I've got relationships with all my kids. I speak to every one of my kids most days. And it takes up a lot of time because they've all got, people always say to me, how are the kids? Well, it's too general because each kid has got a different life. And you know this, and they've got different issues going on. And what's Daniel's problems are not Atlanta's problems. What's Atlanta's problems are not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But one thing they've all got in common, daddy's got to pay. That's the one thing they've all got in common. So, you know, I enjoy an amazing relationship with all the kids, but very different, very different. You know, you ask which kid needs me the most, probably Daniel at the moment. Mm-hmm. Probably Daniel at his age, he needs me the most. Jagger's got Dorit, you know, dealing with his emotional stuff. And Phoenix is a little boss lady anyway. I mean, she just runs the show. And I sometimes struggle to think she's only five. Right. You know, we actually, you know. So it's a beautiful thing. I'm very blessed to have five kids.
Well, it sounds like the role that your father had in your life has really affected you. The fact that he put together that book for your 40th birthday is really quite special. I hope that you do something like that for your son.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And he's been, you know, he's very present in my life, my dad. And he, my early childhood memories are him making me breakfast and chasing me out of the house, making sure I had a coat and making sure I had my lunch, and just a super caring man. He still sends emails. He'll send an email to Dorit. Dear Dorit, I've been reading lately about Calabasas and a lion that was in the canyon that came down and the mother had to wrestle, and I want you to be careful of lions. And he'll send these random notes, or he'll hear about a robbery.
Are your parents Jewish?
Yeah.
Jewish parents are so nurturing and so loving. I have Protestant parents and they would never do that. My mom would be like, good luck with the lion.
It's funny, isn't it? I don't think you can put it down to religion. I think it's that, listen, a Jewish mother genetically is a warrior, right? They're famous for that.
Yeah.
My father, who's a chartered accountant, he's a professional man, and he's been a chartered accountant all his life. He's 82 now and he's retired. He's been unwell last year, which ironically they didn't show on the show, but when Dorit's wedding party was on, you know, I could barely speak because my father was in hospital with some significant issues going on. And then he got COVID and I was really worried that night. And I think I might have even said a few words about him and got a bit tearful. It didn't make the show, obviously. So when I say obviously, I question why these things don't make the show, why they'd rather show two ladies arguing, you know, over who took the ice or whatever it is, or over, you know, one of some of the benign arguments they have. But that's the show. That's what sells. And let's face it, Baskin is a genius. And the show's super successful. Yeah. And you know what they say? If it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know?
But also because of it, you know, there's a whole range of people that connect with you and your wife and your personal story. And I'm sure it's going to lead to other incredible opportunities. Tell me a little bit about what you're working on now.
Yeah. So there's so many things that I work on. I'm an investor in a number of, well, they're not even startups at the moment. One is about to pop. It's a blockchain technology deal where I'm bringing an NFT platform on real estate to the global market. That's really exciting for me because it's a new take on real estate, which is actually my legacy, my history. Mm-hmm. I've got a technology company that deals with preventing hip breakages. Obviously, I'm super busy with George and Coach Club. We're making a movie. And as far as the TV show with Maurizio is concerned, believe it or not, it looks like there's going to be two TV shows, and it's not me and Maurizio together. So I'm doing one in the UK, which is looking likely to be on Channel 4. And Maurizio is doing one in America, which is based around the agency. And of course, there's going to be crossover. Mm-hmm. But I don't work for the agency, and I don't, you know, have anything to add to that. And from my own perspective, I've got my own following in the UK, which I like, and people know me. I stem out of the football business, and I did The Apprentice for a number of years. So yeah, we're kind of going on parallel paths, but not necessarily together.
Got it. Well, good. Well, I have really enjoyed chatting with you. I know everyone's really enjoyed seeing you, and I hope that we learn more in the upcoming episodes about your life outside of the fights about the champagne and the ice, right?
Yeah, but they are good fights, aren't they? Let's
be honest. They are good fights. Is there any one last thing that you'd love people to know about you that we may not even get from the show?
Well, I think there's so much you don't get from the show about me. I'm a joker. I'd like to think I'm a caring, kind person. And yeah, I guess it's, you know what I would say? Don't believe all you read. You know, it's just as simple as that. Do not believe all you read. And if I ever meet you, just be nice, which everybody is anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that's it really.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Nikki, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Well, I wanted to ask you about three different shows and the people that are in it, because they are people that have been close to you in your life. To get your insight. The first thing is, you're going to be on this season of Million Dollar Listing LA with Josh Flagg. And what was that like to be in a show with someone that you know so well?
First of all, I love Josh. We've become really good friends. And I had a friend of mine that was selling her house, and she went to Europe and she said, "Would you please list my house?" It was a $17 million Spanish, beautiful, gorgeous house. I mean, it was just beautiful. And so Josh came over and I showed him the house. Couldn't be more fun to be with.
What about your friend, Kathy Hilton, being...
I love Kathy Hilton.
Such a big star on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I'm glad she's doing it. She always wanted to do it. She's fabulous and fun.
What would people be surprised to know about Kathy Hilton?
She is one of the kindest, nicest, genuinely kind person I've known. I gave Kathy her 21st birthday party at Studio 54. So I go back a long way with her. I was there when the kids were, you know, in the baby buggies, when Paris and Nikki were in the baby. She's got big shoulders. She takes on a lot of responsibility and she does it effortlessly.
What would we be surprised to know about Paris?
She's adorable, hard worker, a real sweetheart. I mean, I love them. And I love the Kardashians. I know them forever too.
And what do you think about the success that they've had? Would you have anticipated it, knowing them, you know, before the show came about?
Well, you know, everything in life is timing. They were at the right place at the right time. And, you know, everybody's, oh, you know, they're famous for being famous. But that's not true. They're terrific. They're hardworking. They had a television show that was on the air for 12 years or 13 years. And, you know, they have a very unique family dynamic. I love Chris. I was actually friendly with Chris when she was married to Bruce, when he was Bruce. In fact, my friend Alan Carr did Can't Stop the Music, and Bruce was in the movie. So, I mean, I go back to the beginning. I gave a big party at my house for Kathy Lee Gifford and Frank Gifford. It was their birthday, and they came to that. And in fact, the other day, I was sitting at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and Kim and Chris were both having lunch there with Lauren Michael. So I would assume that means they'll probably be on a Saturday Night Live.
And then I wanted to ask you about Jackie Collins, because there's this great CNN documentary, Lady Boss, and...
It actually, I don't think it really depicts her. She was much better than the documentary. And it was made by her kids. I was not pleased with the documentary at all. She was a more dynamic. I thought they sort of put her down a little bit, which I guess that's like self-deprecation or whatever it is. But she was another totally, you know, Joan Collins is one of my close friends. I met Joan Collins when I was 19 years old. I was in a twist contest, and Joan judged the twist contest with Bob Hope, and I won. And that's how I met Joan Collins.
So what did you think in terms of what the audience missed out on as far as Jackie's story?
She had a wonderful personality. She was really fun. She was one of the most dynamic women I've ever met, as is her sister. They're very unique women.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And, you know, you have to live your life. I mean, I had billboards all over Sunset. I did whatever I want. As long as I didn't hurt anybody, it didn't bother anybody. I just did my own thing. Mm-hmm. Have lots of wonderful friends, great family. I'm very lucky.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, PK and Nikki, and remind you to subscribe to the show. Leave a 5-star review. Can you believe I'm almost to 400 episodes? If you want to do a little favor to me, just leave a great 5-star review. I'm almost to 5,000. I would just love it if you wouldn't mind just giving me a great review. I would just so love it. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. And I have to say, Twitter has been really fun lately if you're watching shows and exchanging information about what you're watching. I do that list of must watch each week. If you go to katecasey.substack.com, you'll get it every Monday. And you can check me out on Instagram at katecaseyca. My Patreon with bonus episodes, including the ones about the Gabby case, can be found at Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. On TikTok, it's Kate Casey. And as always, I'm hoping that you have a great week, and make sure that you watch The Lost Sons on CNN. That documentary is absolutely bonkers. You've got to watch it.
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.